Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, September 23rd, 2023. Question. What do you say to those who believe the same benefits to student outcomes could have been accomplished at a reduced price by building one new high school, a third comprehensive high school? School bond opinion. Perfection is the enemy of progress. 95 years. That's the age of the original structure we know as Midland High School. The site predates the invention of the microwave oven, scotch tape, and yes, even sliced bread. The first students who attended school there in 1928 didn't know about walkie-talkies, power steering, or kitty litter because they hadn't been invented yet. The polio vaccine wouldn't exist for another 27 years. Nearly 100 years later, our students are navigating artificial intelligence, will soon have self-driving cars, and are a few years away from seeing a base built on the moon. The advancements in science and technology are astounding, and there's no stopping the progress and growth still to come. Also astounding is the debate about whether our children deserve modern and spacious schools to match the century they live in. Over the years, opponents to school bonds addressing our high schools have foregone opportunities to build new schools and invest in the future of Midland. Because these proposals were deemed imperfect, they were all shot down. Once again, opponents to the bond state that Midlanders should, quote, declare an educational emergency, end quote, and vote against it. We agree we are in a state of educational emergency. However, voting against the bond won't remedy overcrowding, safety, and security insufficiencies and academic struggles. Doing nothing solves nothing, and continuing to vote no will only prolong this perpetual state of emergency even further. Some say we don't need two new high schools, only one, due to cost. It would indeed cost less to build one school instead of two, but it would never suffice in addressing the state of emergency everyone agrees exists. Our children are practically sitting on top of one another. Competing for space and feeling miserable, how can we expect them to excel and achieve great things, yet refuse them the space and modernization they need to do it? MISD enrollment is projected to increase by 400 plus students every year for the next 9 years, our largest classes being kindergarten through third grade. If only a single high school is built to address current dire needs, we'll be in a state of emergency again and having this exact same debate in just a few years. Why would we do that to ourselves? Why would we do that to our children? We should be proactive and plan ahead, not eternally stuck playing catch up. Midlanders will recall we already tried the building one more high school bond. That plan was proposed in 2019 and rejected by voters. Feedback from the community indicated they voted no because they wanted to retain the tradition of Midland having just two high schools. It was believed a third high school would disrupt the balance and identity of Midland. Logistical issues were also raised regarding how students would be filtered through the four junior highs into three high schools. Which students would get to go to the new modern spacious school, which would not. What we need and what the majority of Midlanders want, based on 2019's rejected proposal, are two completely new and comprehensive high schools to replace the original ones, even if that means our children don't attend school in the exact same buildings we attended. Tradition is important. It also transcends architecture. A planning process over 2 years in the making involving a broad set of community members developed a proposal to build improved versions of MHS and LHS that are large enough, advanced enough, and versatile enough to effectively accommodate our growing population and facilitate students' academic paths toward graduation, college, and career for decades to come. A single new high school and two aging ones will never meet that need. Currently, our high schools are overflowing with more than 5,100 students when their combined capacity is around 4,200. Both schools only serve sophomores through seniors. The nearly 1,800 freshmen are at separate campuses. The improved versions of MHS and LHS will serve all four grade levels and up to 3,800 students each, with room to expand as Midland continues to expand. Finally, all our high schoolers from freshmen to seniors can be in one location and have a true high school experience, with full access to the academic programs, sports, clubs, and extracurriculars previously reserved for upperclassmen at the main campuses. Such an upgrade even allows for complete grade reconfiguration throughout the district, including the opportunity to open two more middle schools. Why would we say no to that opportunity? Saying no for decades is what created our educational emergency. As Midland grew and the buildings did not, we steadily banished students to 115 dungeon-like portables, often purchased for as much as $150,000 each, instead of providing brick-and-mortar schools. This total is expected to increase to 245 within the next 10 years if we don't act now. That's another $20 million wasted on temporary solutions. We are knee-deep in negligence, and the cost to reconcile these wrongs once and for all is the price tag of the proposed bond. It's a price that will only continue to increase, waiting on the perfect solution that will never exist. Luckily, this bond, unlike the others that have come before, can be passed without increasing the total school tax rate. Nothing is ever truly perfect. We believe the pursuit of perfection can be a noble goal, but it's subjective and ultimately a pursuit that requires the luxury of time. We don't have that luxury. Midland has been running its education system on borrowed time, bandaged buildings, and overcrowded classrooms for far too long. We are out of excuses. A community of more than 140,000 people will never agree on what a perfect bond looks like. But we can come together on a great one, this one. Visit www.midlandbond2023.com for more information and vote yes on November 7th. The deadline for voter registration is October 10th. Early voting takes place October 23rd to November 3rd. About Energize Midland Schools. Energize Midland Schools, EMS, seeks to advocate for and support the advancement of education excellence through responsible, strategic, and impactful investment in our school facilities. For more information, visit www.energizemidlandschools.com. School bond opinion. Academics first, facility improvement second. First and foremost, Midlanders for Excellence in Education's focus is ensuring the best possible education for our children. We believe that our community's main priority has to be improving educational outcomes and our children's futures. There is no excuse for it to be anything else. We need to demand better for our children today and not assume facility improvements will yield better educational results in the future. Before this community votes to invest in new facilities, we think they deserve and should demand transparency and accountability from MISD. MISD should disclose how they plan to utilize their nearly $500 million annual budget to improve our students' academic performance. Then and only then should we consider a bond for new facilities. We cannot continue to accept the status quo and MISD's history of mismanagement. The real issue lies in the fact that the district is posing that new, shiny facilities will fix our problems. From our perspective, the current proposed bond is like attempting to put Band-Aids on a cracked dam that is about to explode. Until we address the root cause of our district's problems, no amount of money will make a difference in our children's education. We believe that Midland can do better for our students, and our focus today should be on achieving better educational outcomes. Afterward, we can address facility needs responsibly and transparently. We've heard the argument that we wouldn't have any problems if the district had more money. Consider this. MISD has increased spending by over 100% in the last decade. Concurrently, the student enrollment has grown only 20%. At the same time, MISD's spending per student has increased by 40%. MISD does not have a money problem, they have an accountability problem. Please do not buy into the narrative that we are out of time to build new schools because we are not. We are, however, out of bargaining chips to force the district's hand to fix our schools. If we hand over this vote, the tax-paying citizens will have lost all negotiating power. Those in favor of the bond say we have a crisis in our school buildings, but the crisis lies in the level of education our children are receiving. MISD has a steep hill to climb to prove to citizens that they can be responsible, transparent, and accountable. As Stephen Covey mentions, quote, "We cannot talk ourselves out of a problem we behaved ourselves into," end quote. However, there are plenty of opportunities for the district to prove itself first and then let the community reward it with new facilities. Below are concrete steps we want to see MISD take before asking for replacement schools. 1. MISD should enforce its academic turnaround plans are fully accessible to the public, so we can follow along and hold the district accountable. The community deserves to see measurable results, and the district should stop adjusting the parameters of their academic plans when the performance does not meet the originally defined goals. We need to be open and honest about the state of our education. 2. MISD should utilize its unrestricted budget surplus of over $200 million to address some of the needs this current bond focuses on. Doing so would allow the district to take accountability for its previous missteps and demonstrate fiscal responsibility by avoiding some bond debt. One option would be to build the proposed $48 million elementary school in the Lone Star Trails subdivision. It is legal for the district to construct a school through this process. The school district doesn't want to because we believe, quite frankly, they find it easier to ask for more money from Midland taxpayers than to appropriately invest the tax dollars already afforded to them. Another option would be to tackle the district's $200 million plus deferred maintenance budget. That amount is unacceptable and never should have risen to the level it did. While they're at it, the district should present a plan to ensure this amount of deferred maintenance never happens again. 3. MISD should address its actual capacity issues clearly and transparently. If MISD needs more high school seats, we could address the problem by building a third smaller high school instead of the two large high schools the bond recommends. The cost of doing so would surely be a fraction price of this bond's proposed $500 million per high school. We believe our children's education is more important than the financiers, architecture firms, and construction companies that will profit off this behemoth of a bond. Remember, you don't have to support this bond to support our schools and children. Let's demand better for our children today. Oil prices post first loss in a month. After reaching their highest levels of the year, crude prices retreated as the Federal Reserve signaled one more interest rate hike before the end of the year. Prices posted their first weekly loss in a month. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange fell 3 of 5 trading days, starting the week with a 71-cent gain, followed by a $1.20 loss Tuesday and Wednesday. A change in near-month contracts to November sent prices below $90 a barrel, but they recovered 40 cents to end the week at $90.03, down from $90.77 at last Friday's close. The posted price closed the week at $86.51, according to Plains All-American. Natural gas futures on the NYMEX rose 3 of 5 trading days, opening the trading week with a 6-cent gain, followed by a 12-cent jump that sent Henry Hub futures to $2.85 per MCF. Prices then retreated 11 cents Wednesday, and an additional 12.3 cents Thursday before inching up almost 3 cents to end the week at $2.637 per MCF, down from $2.664 at last Friday's close. Quote, for months, I've asked the question why prices don't reflect general market fundamentals, end quote. Jared Blong, founder and partner in Octane Energy, told the Reporter Telegram following his participation in a panel discussion at the West Texas Geological Society's Fall Symposium. He said balance in the market seems to be reaching, quote, where it needs to be, end quote. And Saudi Arabia is working to uphold prices. People have to understand operators are price takers, not price generators, he said. Quote, I don't anticipate a significant flurry of activity, end quote, in response to higher prices, said Blong, who has 5 wells permitted to drill as operators remain committed to the fiscal discipline they have practiced the last 18 to 24 months. Activity, quote, won't stay on autopilot. I think we'll see a bump in rig activity, but nothing meaningful. For one, we continue to get more efficient, and two, everyone is very disciplined, end quote, he said. He added that the 2024 election year is approaching and operators are trying to understand what will happen with that election. J. Michael Pardee, Chief Executive Officer and President of Barrel Oil and Gas, attributed the current strength in crude prices to federal policies, quote, that are not advantageous to lower oil prices, end quote, as well as Saudi Arabia's determination to support higher prices. As long as U.S. operators don't have the capacity to fill the void left by the output cuts instituted by Saudi Arabia and Russia, quote, the Saudis will exploit it. Biden has not helped except through selling oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, end quote. Party, who has a well permitted in Hockley County, added, quote, higher prices are because of policies and an agenda that is not conducive to the American people, end quote. The strength of the U.S. dollar and rhetoric from the Federal Reserve about higher interest rate has taken a toll on oil prices recently, wrote Tim Waterer, chief market analyst at KCM Trade, but the pullback has so far been shallow. Quote, investors are concerned about what a prolonged period of higher interest rates may mean for growth prospects. This concern has hit a number of assets, including oil, end quote, he wrote. Quote, however, supply cuts look likely to protect any deeper downside moves in the short term, end quote. What's up with Midland? Centennial Park, Basin PBS Heritage Festival, September 30th. Colorado Street, Downtown Farmers Market, new location, every Saturday. The Destination, Tall City Blues Fest, Saturday. Bring Your Own Blues Open Jam, September 28th. Friday Night Live, Last Child, September 29th. Earth, Body, and Soul, Walk-In Tarot Reading, every Tuesday. Walk-In Reiki Energy Clearing, every Wednesday. Annual Spiritual Life Fair, Saturday, Sunday. Kitchen Witchery, September 29th. Horseshoe, Texas Battle Bowl Esports and Gaming Expo, September 29th through October 1st. Midland Community Theater, Rumors, Saturday, September 29th through 30th. Museum of the Southwest, Septemberfest, September 29th through October 1st. The Tailgate, Party in the Permian every Thursday. Family Fun Day every Sunday. Dueling Pianos, September 29th. Modern Pop-Up Market, September 30th. Tall City Brewing Company, Geeks Who Drink Trivia every Tuesday. Tall City Beer Run every Thursday. The Venue at Live Oak, Sarah Hobbs, September 28th. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, Key of G Live, Sunday. The Book of Mormon, September 27th through 28th. West Texans donate $840,000 to fight childhood cancer. West Texans, already known for their generosity, extended their generosity to support children battling cancer and other life-threatening illnesses. A recent two-day event, a West Texas-themed banquet at the Bush Convention Center, followed by a sporting clay tournament at Jake's Clays, raised $840,000. The funds will directly benefit Sky High for Kids initiatives and its pledges with St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, Texas Children's Hospital, and Covenant Children's Hospital, among others. Sky High for Kids is a nonprofit organization founded by Brittany Herbert Franklin to support children undergoing treatment for cancer and other life-threatening conditions. The organization's efforts benefit leading hospitals and research centers in closing the gap in childhood cancer rates globally. Franklin served as the auctioneer during the silent auction at the dinner. Since 2007, the organization has donated more than $25 million to leading children's hospitals and research centers. According to the American Cancer Society, about 9,910 children in the U.S. under 15 will be diagnosed with cancer in 2023. Community Calendar, Shepherd Leadership Institute. The Shepherd Leadership Institute will present a special evening with Richard Montanez, the renowned former PepsiCo executive, motivational speaker, and the man behind the iconic Flamin' Hot Cheetos. The event will take place at 7 p.m. Tuesday at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center and promises an unforgettable story on perseverance, innovation, and the transformative power of self-belief. Admission is free. Richard Montanez started his journey as a janitor at Frito-Lay Rancho Cucamonga plant in California. With no formal education in business, he demonstrated unparalleled innovation and initiative by creating one of the most beloved snacks, the Flamin' Hot Cheetos. His meteoric rise from janitor to one of the most influential leaders in the corporate world is not just a testament to his genius, but also a beacon of inspiration for countless individuals worldwide. Farmers Market and Car Show. The Midland Medical Lodge Annual Farmers Market and Car Show will take place at 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday at 3000 Mockingbird Lane. This year's proceeds will benefit Senior Life, Midland's Meals on Wheels program. There will be activities for kids, shopping, food, and music. It's fun for the entire family. Downtown Library. The air conditioning system at the downtown branch of the Midland County Public Library is fixed. The library is resuming its regular hours, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. City's Free Microchip Clinic. Midland Animal Services is offering free microchip clinics through the end of September for cats and dogs. Clinic hours will be from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Tuesday through Friday and 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday. No appointment is required. Upon your arrival at 1200 North Fairgrounds, park in the designated spots 1 through 5 on the north end of the parking lot and call 432-685-7420. Midland Animal Services staff will come to your car for check-in. Community calendar. St. Anne's Family Fair and Carnival, September 28th through October 1st. Septemberfest, September 30th through October 1st, Museum of the Southwest. National Night Out, October 3rd. Midland Chamber of Commerce Annual Meeting, October 3rd, Bush Convention Center. 38th Annual Taste of the Permian Basin, October 5th, Horseshoe Pavilion. Make a Difference Day, Annual Fall Community Cleanup, October 7th. Pink the Basin Luncheon, October 10th, Horseshoe Pavilion. 2023 WTX Women, Professional Women's Symposium, October 11th through 12th. Senior Life Midland, 34th Annual Texas Size Garage Sale, October 13th, 14th, 17th, and 19th. Pink in the Park, October 14th, Centennial Park. Wine and Whiskers Benefiting Fix West Texas, October 14th, Texas Sun Winery. 12th Annual Fur Ball Benefiting Midland Humane Coalition, Midland Country Club. Reporter Telegram School Bond Forum, October 18th at Midland College. Midland Northside Lions Club's 20th Annual Family-Oriented Roar with Laughter Comedy-Variety Show, October 21st, Hispanic Cultural Center. LHS Dolls Annual Charity Golf Tournament, October 21st, Hogan Park. www.lhsdolls.com. Cruise for a Cause Car Show, October 28th, Horseshoe Pavilion. Quote, Love Comes First, An Evening with Jenna and Barbara Bush, end quote. November 7th, Petroleum Club. Regular events. Rescue Runners, 8 to 10 a.m., first and third Saturdays, Midland Animal Shelter. Gentle Healing Yoga for Cancer-Impacted People, noon and 5:30 p.m., Monday, Yoga Sanctuary, 4202 Dawn Circle, 79707. One Bite at a Time's Cancer Support Groups every second Tuesday of each month, 7 p.m. at 3813 North Midland Drive. Upcoming meetings, Midland County, 9 a.m. Monday, Commissioner's Courtroom, Midland County Courthouse, 500 North Lorraine Street. Midland Development Corp, 3 p.m. Monday, Midland Chamber of Commerce, Boardroom, 303 West Wall Street, Suite 200. Midland City Council, 10 a.m. Tuesday, Council Chamber, City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Street. Important election dates, October 10th, last day to register to vote. October 18th, Reporter Telegram School District 7 and School Bond Forums at Midland College. October 23rd, first day of 2 weeks of early voting. October 27th, last day to apply for a ballot by mail. November 3rd, last day of early voting. November 7th, election day, and last day to receive ballot by mail. Opinion. Bass Pro has received enough from the taxpayer. Bass Pro Shops in Midland at any cost to taxpayers? I am a proponent of Bass Pro Shops and economic development coming to Midland if it makes sense. In March, the City Council voted unanimously in favor of a deal. So why are we voting on a new deal? We're not. We're voting to give away taxpayer incentives with nothing in return. So why negotiate against ourselves? Is needlessly sweetening the pot to the tune of millions more in property tax abatements, sales tax rebates, and sales tax dollars from MDC justified by the mayor, who was quoted saying she is, quote, committed to upholding our word, and I look forward to voting in favor of Bass Pro Shops, end quote. We upheld our word in March when we approved the first deal, so why change it? We're not. nor are we upholding our fiduciary duty to what's best for the taxpayer. Did Bass Pro Shops take the first steps to come back and request more incentives? No. So why revisit what we've shaken hands on? Fear that they would go elsewhere based on rumors that we have no merit. What rumors? Another city is offering more economic incentives. First, it was the story that Odessans were courting them with free land adjacent to Synergy in Odessa, and economic incentives from the Odessa City Council and Odessa Development Corp. Any truth to those rumors? No. After speaking with Odessa Mayor Javier Jovan and others to determine the truthfulness of this rumor, I learned that the proposed free land in Odessa is in Midland County. Does that matter? The city of Odessa, their mayor and council, have been working on improving their relationship with the Midland County Commissioner's Court due to growth in that area along State Highway 191. It makes no sense for Odessa to steal a development deal from Midland and then turn around and ask Midland County for help. I communicated my knowledge of this to others, and coincidentally, the rumor evolves. Now, the Ector County judge is wooing Bass Pro Shops. I look into the merit of that allegation, and if the proposed free land is in Midland County next to Synergy and Odessa, where would Ector County offer any incentives? Ector County collects no sales tax there, and they have no economic development arm with deep pockets like Odessa Development Corp. That rumor has no merit either. The rumor evolves again. Now a city somewhere else is offering them a sweeter deal. Okay, where? Nationwide Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's have, quote, received or are promised over $2.2 billion from American taxpayers over the past 15 years, end quote, according to a Bloomberg article. I suppose that blanket statement that some other city is offering them incentives is true. However, that was true the minute we started negotiating with them. So why does that merit giving them more incentives and taxpayer money now? It doesn't. Rumors and the fear of missing out on Bass Pro Shops were used to manipulate elected officials into giving this economic development deal more taxpayer incentives. Nothing in writing saying 100,000 square feet compared to the 55,000 in the deal we inked. Only mere speculation that if we don't give them more, Midlanders will miss out. I was elected to be a voice for Midlanders and exercise good financial judgment affecting taxpayers. Prior to annexation, the city collected zero property tax on raw and undeveloped land. Growth on that side of town merits planning to avoid the bottlenecks of Northeast Midland. State Highways 158 and 191 continue to see development. Wadley's extension, Briarwood continuing on to four lanes past County Road 60 West, need our attention, including long-term plans for traffic signals on State Highway 158 at Sinclair. Wadley, when it's extended, and Briarwood. March's deal articulates what Midlanders get. A yes vote on Tuesday says we'll do anything to make this deal happen at taxpayer expense. Is our mayor so desperate for a win to put a feather in her cap regardless of how anemic the plumage simply to have a victory? Any victory during her leadership? That is no win for taxpayers. It is a pyrrhic victory, which in military terms means the win costs us so much it equates to a loss. Carelessly giving away taxpayer money is a slap in the face to small business owners whom over the years, boom or bust, survived and thrived without corporate welfare. Make no mistake, we are taking part in picking the winners and losers, yet we say we are not. If a real estate deal is an art, then what we have here is a 101 in how not to negotiate with taxpayer money. We agreed to a stepped property tax abatement with 100% the first 2 years and ending at 20% the last two. Now the mayor wants to offer 100% for 10 years. What? Originally, we offered a 50% sales tax rebate for 7 years, and now we're extending it to 10 and throwing in another $500,000 in MDC sales tax dollars for a total of $5.5 million. Why? I will not put the taxpayer over a barrel to state I did everything possible to keep this deal. Midland is a desirable location for businesses, and I take pride in saying if Midland is not desirable enough for Bass Pro, I wouldn't mind a Costco. We continue chasing Bass Pro, and I can't for the life of me understand why. The mayor defended raising the property tax rate this year for $5 million extra, arguing we needed it for taxpayer wallets. Then she turns around and gives away millions to this developer on top of what we already offered. You cannot be a fiscal conservative one day and something else the next. nor can you say you're an advocate for transparency and then be as opaque as a brick wall when it comes to sharing how we are managing taxpayer money. Contrary to Gordon Gekko's adage that, quote, greed is good, end quote, greed at the taxpayer expense should be a crime, and I will not vote to put my hand deeper into the taxpayers' pockets needlessly. I would like a Bass Pro Shop to come to Midland, but I'm not giving them the kitchen sink to get it. Could it be one last weekend in the 90s? The high on Friday was 97 degrees, 11 degrees above the typical average for September 22nd in Midland. It's not going to get better on the first day of fall. The National Weather Service is calling for a high of 99 degrees, which at least isn't triple digits. Could Saturday and Sunday be the last of the 90-degree days in Midland? It is possible. The National Weather Service is showing high temperatures in the 80s through September 29th. Still, it appears September 2023 is on track to be one of the warmest Septembers on record in Midland. Friday's report. Friday's high, 97 degrees. Typical high for September 22nd, 86 degrees. Friday's low, 74 degrees. Typical low for September 22nd, 63 degrees. Previous record high for September 22nd, 100 degrees in 1977. Last 3 days, Wednesday, 98 degrees. Thursday, 92 degrees. Friday, 97 degrees. Next 3 days, Saturday, 99 degrees. Sunday, 98 degrees. Monday, 86 degrees. Rainfall. This month, 0.90 inch. This year, 2.69 inches. Normal through September 21st, 10.55 inches. Next chance of rainfall. Sunday, 20% chance at night. Monday, 20% chance during the day and night.
Odessa Council sets property tax rate again. Odessa City Council on Friday, for the second time, ratified the tax rate after discovering the published notice on the tax increase was incorrect. During the special meeting Friday afternoon, the council voted unanimously once again to an increase in property taxes. City Council member Denise Swanner and Mayor Javier Hoven both pressed the fact that the tax rate is unchanged from last year, and sought to explain that it is not a tax increase, as most of the new revenue it will bring in is from new properties that were not on tax roll last year. While it is true that the majority of the more than $2.5 million in new tax revenue will come from new properties, it is incorrect that some homeowners won't pay more in property taxes this year. Those who have higher appraisals than last year will pay more. Interim Director of Finance Seth Bowles has said the increase will bring in roughly $2.5 million, or 5% more than last year, and of that amount, $1.9 million will come from new property added to the tax roll this year. That means about $600,000 will come from increased taxes for some homeowners with higher appraisals than last year. According to materials provided to the City Council, an error was made in creating the public notice about the tax increase, and the meeting was held to correct the error. Public notices must be published on the homepage of the City of Odessa's website and in the Odessa American. The city is attributing the error to the Ector County Appraisal District. Previously, the council had to revote on several items due to incorrect taking action. Once on the firing of the city manager and city attorney, and a second time was naming the new city attorney. Friday's vote was to ratify a tax rate of 483791 per $100 valuation. While the rate is the same as last year, it is considered a tax increase on Odessians as it brings in more money than last year. Again, a majority of that money will come from new property added to the tax roll, but some will also come from properties that appraise higher than they did last year. The council could have voted to lower the rate and bring in the same amount of property tax revenue as last year. No one spoke during the Friday public hearing on the tax increase, and a summary of the agenda item expressly states the new rate, quote, means the city of Odessa is proposing to increase property taxes for the 2023 tax year, end quote. No such language was included in last week's materials. The summary also included rules about public hearing requirements, public notices, and when the council is allowed to vote on proposed tax rates. Again, none of that language was included the first time around. Ross Leek, the committee clerk for the Texas Senate's Tax Policy Committee, commented on the incorrect posting of the tax rate on X, formerly known as Twitter. He said the city's notice contained glaring miscalculations/errors, was likely out of compliance with the notice provisions of the tax code, and could subject the adoption of their tax rate to litigation. Although the final vote on the proposed tax rate was originally set for September the 26th, it will now occur on September the 28th. Undercut could doom Biden's cancer moonshot. 30 years ago, AIDS patients faced increasing symptoms and the risk of death while awaiting life-saving drugs that had shown enormous promise in clinical trials, but that were hung up in the FDA's traditional approval process. In response, Congress sanctioned a new FDA accelerated approval pathway that gave patients earlier access to medicines. Lives were spared, and our healthcare system finally had solutions to manage a disease that was ravaging our nation. That same accelerated approval pathway has saved countless lives over the past three decades. Cancer treatments have been developed and delivered to patients more readily. Rare diseases, once considered untreatable, now have new standards of care that were previously completely unthinkable. Despite this, the pathway is back in the news, and for all the wrong reasons. Congress recently passed legislation that changed the accelerated approval pathway in significant ways. The latest reforms could substantially weaken the pathway and its potential to bring future treatments down the pike. It's puzzling that some elected officials are championing the cancer moonshot, while at the same time undermining the pathway that's facilitated earlier access to breakthrough cancer drugs. Accelerated approval is reserved for treatments that address serious or life-threatening conditions for which there are currently no adequate therapies. Under traditional FDA approval, new drugs don't get a green light until tests demonstrate they produce a clinical benefit in patients. For example, better cancer survival rates. Under the accelerated approval pathway, however, medications are conditionally approved if they can demonstrate success at a surrogate endpoint, that is, a predetermined and measurable step that predicts a future clinical benefit. For example, if tests show a new cancer drug shrinks tumors, there's a good reason to think it will extend lives. Crucially, if further required testing determines the medication has failed to deliver on its initial promise, its accelerated approval can be revoked. But in the overwhelming majority of cases, some 76.5% of accelerated approvals between 1992 and 2016, confirmatory testing has led to what's called conversion to traditional approval. Compromising the accelerated approval pathway would lead to fewer new treatments, period. Emerging biotech companies are responsible for about 80% of all experimental medicines in the drug development pipeline. Yet these firms often lack the funds to see a drug all the way from creation to confirmatory testing. With accelerated approval, they can begin selling their medication sooner, thereby enabling them to financially sustain the final rounds of testing themselves. Unfortunately, that might not be a workable business model much longer. The FDA's top oncology regulator said he intends to begin withholding accelerated approval of new cancer drugs until confirmatory trials are already underway. As a result, two companies have already seen promising cancer treatments delayed because of this new policy. Further concerns lie in the inconsistencies around access to drugs approved under the accelerated approval pathway. The Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, for example, has disclosed plans to pay less for accelerated approval drugs that haven't completed confirmatory studies. Equally worrying, CMS has issued a national coverage determination that will prevent most Medicare beneficiaries from accessing an entire class of groundbreaking new Alzheimer's treatments simply because they received accelerated approval. All told, these misguided coverage restrictions will only delay access to FDA-approved treatments that could change the course of some of the nation's most costly chronic conditions. Kenneth E. Thorpe is a professor of health policy at Emory University and chairman of the Partnership to Fight Chronic Disease. The Idle American, Down from the Cross. Randy Brooks, who portrayed Jesus in The Promise more than 6,000 times, is nearing the 60-year mark in Christian ministry, but he still has the look. The kind that causes head scratching when vaguely familiar faces are seen. Randy was cast in the role in 1989 when the award-winning musical began its 34-year run at Glen Rose's Texas Amphitheater. He later appeared for years in Branson, Missouri, at a New York City church and numerous performances internationally before he ended the role when COVID arrived in 2020. Long-haired since the mid-70s, he now is free to leave his gray hair au naturel, unlike most performance years when it was dyed to hide premature graying. Had one of the founding producers of the Glen Rose production not spotted Randy in a hair salon in 1989, he might never have been featured in The Promise. "Can you sing?" she asked. Having been a pianist vocalist since junior high, he quickly answered, not knowing that the producer was looking for a blue-eyed, long-haired man to play Jesus. Then, age 36, Randy, his commitment to God already strongly in place, signed on the course of his life to be forever changed. He sang word-produced songs such as Closer Than a Heartbeat, It Is Written, and Shalom. Randy says he withered and winced with imaginary pain on the cross, but never came close to portraying Jesus' actual suffering. He remembers the challenge of holding on to nails and contorting his body to a 45-degree angle. On the cross for 20 minutes at each performance, his total time there amounted to 83 24-hour days. Producers were never worried about his lacking both theological and theatrical training or changing his mannerisms. He sounded way too Southern, however, so he underwent speech training to sound less so. Throughout his career, Randy has been closely identified with gospel music, but he and his brother Bill also performed throughout the nation for corporate groups, including Amway and American Airlines. Randy also hooked up with the Stamps Quartet, which provided vocal backup for Elvis Presley. He also was music director on 58 episodes of TV's Country Crossroads, and with the Brooks Brothers Band, was named Entertainer of the Year in Texas for 6 consecutive years by the Johnny High Country Music Review Association, and twice honored in Branson as the Male Entertainer of the Year. In 2020, Randy returned to Texas, where he continues to perform largely at churches, retirement centers, and at various other venues. "My body told me it was time to slow down, so I have," Randy said. He feels that he has kept numerous providential appointments in his life, including a recent visit to Shipswana, Indiana, where his brother Bill is MC in the tiny Amish Mennonite community's 2 theaters. With 3 shows left to perform, Randy was helping Bill move household furniture. A large mirror slipped, seriously cutting Randy's right hand between his wrist and thumb. 15 stitches were needed to close the wound, but let's not race ahead. The nearest hospital was 12 miles away, so Bill took Randy to his doctor's office. Blood gushing, Randy learned that it was the doctor's day off. Coming through the back door, however, was the doctor, who lives 20 miles away in Goshen. "I had this strong feeling that I should come to the office," he said. "Providence again, right?" Realizing that Randy had sustained a serious injury, the doctor initially suggested calling an ambulance to take him to a hospital. Then he remembered treating numerous victims of roadway accidents during his Indianapolis internship. He expertly completed the treatment. Randy claimed to be good as new, performed the same evening and at the 2 closing shows the next day. "I don't solicit engagements, but enough still come to me, particularly with Shiloh Road, a Southern gospel quartet in the Metroplex. I'll serve the Lord until I can't." Ever the people person, he now drives for Uber Eats between gigs. He hears numerous comments about his Jesus look and smiles. "God is good now and forever," he said. "With him, I'm ready for whatever comes next." Audit and cleanse. A fall financial cleanse could get your spending back on track. This article was provided to the Associated Press by the personal finance website NerdWallet. Want to suggest a personal finance topic that Quick Fix can address? Email apmoney@ap.org. If summer is a season of spontaneity, then fall offers a counterpoint. It's a chance to get back on schedule and on budget. Summer, with travel and no school, tends to be a really spendy time. The fall is a nice reset, says Ashley Feinstein Gertzley, a certified financial planner and author of The 30-Day Money Cleanse. Here's a guide to a fall financial cleanse that could help get your budget on track for the rest of the year. 1. Nate Hoskin, a certified financial planner at Brightside, says the first step to a fall financial cleanse is to look backward, starting with your New Year's goals. He suggests checking on progress towards resolutions set in January so you can make any needed adjustments. Then, Hoskin says, initiate what he calls a financial audit, which means tracking all of your spending over the last couple of months by poring over credit card and bank statements. From there, you can see what unexpected expenses popped up or why it has been so hard to save. 2, try a budget. If you don't yet follow a budget to help track spending, then the fall is a great time to give one a try, says Ashley Lepato, a financial expert on TikTok who posts as The Organized Wallet and is a spokesperson for the budgeting app YNAB. "I always think the first step is a zero-based budget," she says, "which means every dollar is accounted for, including money set aside for savings and any debt payments. It forces you to confront spending decisions and to get really clear about financial priorities, she says, because you comb through every little bit of spending. Prioritize paying off debt, Stuart Boxenbaum, president of Statewide Financial Group, a financial advisory firm. Reverend Gomez leads at New Hope Church. The Reverend Jesus Gomez says people can only be transformed by understanding the will of God, and he tries each week to give his members and visitors at New Hope Church what they need to progress towards that. My objective is for people to leave with a golden nugget of knowledge that they can easily apply throughout the week, the Reverend Gomez said. Part of our process is that we prepare a take-home sheet with 5 questions relative to the sermon for the person to ask himself or herself. Just having preached on making the home a safe haven, he said, the 3 ingredients we need to apply in the family are love, respect, and submission to one another. We sometimes don't understand the word submission. We think of it in the context of just being obedient or compliant, but the way I was talking about it, it was having a heart of service. Jesus took a towel, washed the feet of his disciples, and said, "Do this with one another." We are selfish by nature, and to serve doesn't come naturally. Gomez is an El Paso native who graduated from high school in Anthony and studied for 3 years to take a degree at Instituto Biblico Philadelphia in El Paso. His 1801 East 6th Street Church averages 50 to 60 people at 10:30 a.m. Sunday. He and his wife, Alexandra, have 4 children. Gomez was the associate pastor for 7.5 years at the First Assembly of God Church in Snyder, where he was mentored by the late Reverend Stephen Pina, and he began his ministry here in June 2021. One of his favorite scriptures is Romans 12:2, which says, quote, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect," end quote. Another is Philippians 4:8. "Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things." Citing Psalm 27:14, Isaiah 40:31, Lamentations 3:25, and other scriptures, Gomez says Christians must be patient. "We wait on the Lord because everything worth having is being cultivated in us and our church," he said, noting that his services are bilingual. God cultivates our minds and souls for us to see what he has seen long before we can experience it. Gomez said Jesus' miracles are described in the New Testament to give us a greater understanding of who we serve. Mandy Pina, the Reverend Pina's widow, said Gomez is a very genuine, loyal person who does what's right and beneficial and deals with people honestly. Jesus does not enter into friendships with any intention of seeking what's best for himself, Pina said. He is not self-seeking at all. He wants to know about the other person's life, and he genuinely cares for that person. He is a fantastic preacher, very knowledgeable of the Word of God, and he puts that knowledge into real-life applications. He is very exuberant, and he has a way of putting people at ease. PHS Life Skills teacher makes her room more sensory-friendly. When she talks about her students, Permian High School Life Skills teacher Ashley Sikora glows. So to help them learn and progress, she obtained a $2,497.98 sensory-friendly environment grant from the Education Foundation. Her students are profoundly autistic, and the goal is to get them as independent as possible so they can move on to the district's Transition Learning Center or out into the workforce. The items have already started coming in, and her kids are loving it. They are going to dye rice different colors and hide things in it for the students to dig out. They will have materials so kids can learn to sort colors. There will also be a sand and water table. None of the kids have great finger control. They don't use pencils, so we get things to help them work on that gripping. So we got different shaped ones, different colors. They're squeegees, so they can soak up water and stuff, Sikora said. One of the things they are working on this year is for students to recognize their names. They can recognize their picture, their face, but not their name. So for safety purposes and for them to be able to tell someone what their name is, we got some alphabet dinosaurs for them to practice uppercase and lowercase, and then to eventually work on their whole name recognition, Sikora said. She added that the students love music, so they got piano panels. I think we're going to try to work on getting an electric drum, because they have drum pads too, Sikora said. She got bubble tubes for the tables to help the students focus and sit in their chairs. They have a larger one in one corner of the room. Students will also have weighted blankets to wrap themselves in and lap blankets they can use while they're working. Sometimes they ask for that. That heavy weight helps to calm them down if they're feeling anxiety or stress, Sikora said. After a lockdown a few weeks ago, one student was very stressed out, so he put a weighted blanket over himself, like a really tight hug, and it brought him back to center, she added. Sikora has 6 boys and 2 girls in her class between the ages of 14 and 19. Their cognitive level, I'd say, is more along the lines of a 2 to 3-year-old, she said. Because there are more boys than girls, there are more boy items than girl items among the sensory toys. We have calendar time stuff for them to work on, days of the week and months of the year. We have, I'd say, 3 or 4 that can do it more independently, Sikora said. We have a big one so we can do it more hands-on with those kiddos, and then we have the ones where they can sit at their desk and use it as well. That's a lot of it. We've got a few other little things for them to work. Their shapes and colors. They're using their hands. It's a lot of hands-on touching and feeling. We've got swings. They're working on getting us a trampoline so the kids can get that energy out. They're a great group of kids, but they're very active, she added. Last year, Sikora said she came to her room halfway through the year. It was going okay, but they knew the kids needed more activity, more hands-on experiences, and more color. The walls were actually white last year, so we came in and painted them like a soft gray and added a little bit of color. The way the kids come in the room now is just completely different from last year. We added the light shades and changed the color of the room, Sikora said. We get more out of them. They've made so much progress these last 3 weeks than we have the entire last year of school. It's amazing how a color of a classroom can change things, she added. The students love touching things. It's just so inspiring to see them explore and touch things, Sikora said. That's why she decided more hands-on items were needed. They need things they can play with and get excited about, and then seeing them light up when they see all the new stuff. Sikora and her paraprofessionals brainstormed and jumped on Amazon and Google trying to figure out what could help the students. We came up with the list we did, and it's been so exciting seeing the kids play and explore the new stuff that we got. You can see I'm glowing. I just get so excited about it. I love doing this with these kids, so it's just great, Sikora said. She acknowledged that she has to have a lot of patience for her job. There are some days it is much easier than others, but it's realizing that most of the time their actions are them trying to communicate, Sakura said. She added that they almost never act out. We had one from last year that we couldn't figure out why he was getting so angry, and then it clicked. It was usually when he was eating. We think he was biting his cheek and he was acting out because he was hurting. You don't quite realize it instantly. It takes some time to try and figure it out, but it just takes patience, Sakura said. I can go home and I can rest, but while I'm here, I push my body and these kids to their limits because that's what they need, she added. This is Sakura's 9th year of teaching and her 5th year at Permian. She started as a paraprofessional with ECISD, then went to Midland ISD and Greenwood for a year, and then returned to ECISD. I was teaching life skills science with the rest of the unit, the main part of the unit. These kiddos are more self-contained right now. They do go to PE and music and choir with the unit. They're getting out of the room more this year than they have in the past. We're working on pushing a little bit more each week to try to get them as much with the other group as possible. We have to kind of think of everybody's academic progress, not just my kids. So we don't want to put too much on the other kiddos and cause too much of a distraction. We're trying to get them as independent as possible. Her paraprofessionals are Rebecca Parson and Sineda Trevino. They are my rocks. I could not survive without them. They are amazing people, Sakura said of her paraprofessionals. Sakura also expressed gratitude for their special education department chair, Molly Hernandez, and the feeling is mutual. Hernandez said Sakura is an amazing teacher. This grant will allow her to provide sensory stimulation for our most vulnerable students. Studies show that the correct sensory input helps the students learn to self-regulate in a more positive way. Sakura has recognized those needs and has made it one of her missions to provide those opportunities for the students she serves. I love her passion and drive, Hernandez said. PHS Principal Delissa Stiles said Sakura and her team go above and beyond to serve the unique needs of their students. She is energetic, kind, and eager to creatively pursue strategies to provide instructional materials for our students in order for them to have optimal learning experiences. We are very proud of her for receiving the grant, Stiles said. Sakura said she would encourage everyone to apply for Education Foundation grants. It's worth it. It takes time to write that grant, and we've got so much going on as teachers that sitting down to do one more thing, it's just one more thing. But the benefit for the kids is tremendous, Sakura said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.